You're listening to ESL Podcast English Cafe, number 564. This is English as a Second Language Podcast, English Cafe, episode 564. I'm your host, Dr. Jeff McQuillan, coming to you from the Center for Educational Development in beautiful Los Angeles, California. Go to ESLPOD.com. and take a look at our ESL podcast special courses. If you're on Facebook, you can like us on Facebook. Go to facebook.com/ESLPOD. On this cafe, we're going to talk about the American author Mary Roberts Rinehart. We're also going to talk about a famous love song from the 20th century, I'll Be Seeing You. And as always, we'll answer a few of your questions. Let's get started. Mary Roberts was born on August 12th, 1876, in the state of Pennsylvania. Pennsylvania is located in the eastern part of the United States, one of the original 13 U.S. states. Mary Roberts began her career, her working life, as a nurse when she was 20 years old in 1896. That same year, however, she married a doctor by the name of Stanley Rinehart, and changed her name to Mary Roberts Rinehart. She kept what we would call her maiden name, or her last name before she got married. A maiden, M-A-I-D-E-N, is an unmarried woman. Mary Roberts Rinehart and her husband, Stanley, had three sons and one daughter. In 1903, the stock market had what we call a crash in the United States. The stock, S-T-O-C-K, market is a place where you buy and sell, well, of course, stock. Stock is partial ownership of a company. When you buy stock in a company, or when you buy a company's stock, you are buying a certain percentage of that company. You own a small percentage of that company. A stock market, then, is a place where you buy and sell partial ownership of companies. If we say a stock market crashes, we mean that the value of the stocks goes down quickly, goes down suddenly. All of a sudden, stocks that were worth a lot of money are not worth very much money. This means that the value of the companies themselves, of course, go down rapidly. From time to time, periodically, we would say, stock markets crash, and the U.S. stock market crashed in 1903. This was very bad news for the Rinehart's because they lost a lot of the money that they had because they had owned a lot of stocks. This meant that they needed to find other ways of making money. So Mary Roberts Rinehart decided she would make money by writing stories and selling them. Writing came easily to Reinhardt. She wrote 45 stories in 1903 alone, meaning in the period of just 12 months, she wrote 45 stories. Many of these stories appeared in a popular magazine at that time by the name of Munsey's Magazine. In 1908, about 5 years later, Mary published her first novel called The Circular Staircase. This was a mystery novel about a woman named Rachel Innes who sees and hears strange noises and things at a summer home, a place where she lives during the summertime. A mystery describes a story usually about a crime that has been committed, often a murder. In the story, we find out who committed the crime, and throughout it, we're trying to figure out who the murderer is. The Circular Staircase, then, was a mystery novel, and it was successful. That is, Reinhardt managed to sell many copies of her book. The next year, she wrote another mystery novel, this one called The Man in the Lower Ten. It tells the story of a lawyer who wakes up from a nap, from a short period of sleeping on a train, to find that all of his papers have been stolen. Ooh, what happened? Well, to find out, you have to read the mystery. This second book was also very popular, and it helped solidify Reinhardt as a popular mystery writer in the United States. To solidify, S-O-L-I-D-I-F-Y, means to make stronger. So when we say the second book solidified her reputation as a great or popular mystery writer, we mean that it helped make certain, it provided even stronger evidence that she was, in fact, a good writer, or at least a writer that people wanted to buy. Reinhardt began writing and publishing about one new mystery novel every year, beginning after the success of her second novel. In 1911, she created a character for her novels by the name of Letitia Carberry, or Tish for short. Tish was a middle-aged, unmarried woman who did things that women during this period tended not to do. Middle-aged describes someone who is neither old nor young. I guess we could say middle-aged is probably someone nowadays between the ages of, say, 45 and 65. Tish and her friends in these novels did things that other women did not commonly do. They flew in airplanes, they drove race cars, they hunted bears, they hunted animals. They were exciting things that they did, shocking things, really, for women to do in the early part of the 20th century. The fact that the people in her novels, the women in her novels, did these things that were unusual for women to do during this period made the novels all that more popular. In addition to the five books that Reinhardt wrote about this character, Tish, she continued to write short stories that were published in magazines such as the Saturday Evening Post. In fact, Tish continued to appear in stories in the magazine, and it helped Reinhardt continue her popularity as a writer. Beginning in 1914, Reinhardt started to write romances in addition to the mysteries that she was writing. A romance, R-O-M-A-N-C-E, is a book or a movie about love, about two people falling in love. Reinhardt then was writing both mysteries and romances. In addition to the short stories that she would write, these were the main forms of fiction or made-up stories that she was making money off of. Reinhardt's romance stories were popular, although many of the people didn't think that they were as good as her mystery stories that she had become famous for. Although it's not always true that novelists write about their own lives, it was somewhat the case with Mary Roberts Reinhardt that the novels reflected some of her own problems and issues. In most of the novels, the married couples are unhappy, but the mothers and the children in the stories have good relationships. In real life, Reinhardt's husband was not very happy that his wife was much more successful than he was, and so in many ways, her own marriage was not a particularly happy one. But as in the case of Reinhardt's novels, she did have a good relationship with her own children. In addition to her mystery, romance, and other fiction writing, Mary Roberts Reinhardt also wrote plays. A play, P-L-A-Y, is a story that is acted out upon a stage in a theater with actors and actresses. The first play that Reinhardt wrote was called 7 Days, and it was performed in New York City in 1909, soon after she became popular as a novelist. Her second play was called The Bat, and that was actually based on her first novel, The Circular Staircase. It was first performed in 1920, also in New York City. Mary Roberts Reinhardt wrote for the rest of her life, basically, until 1958. During the nearly 55 years that she wrote, she published more than 50 books, 8 plays, and hundreds of short stories. By the time she died, she had sold over 10 million copies of her books, many of which remained popular long after her death. If you are a lover of mystery stories in English, you may have heard of Mary Roberts Reinhardt. Her books are no longer popular the way they were in the early part of the 20th century, but they are still considered by lovers of mysteries to be wonderful books, wonderful stories, wonderful novels. Now let's turn to our second topic, which is a famous song also from the middle of the 20th century, a song by the name of I'll Be Seeing You. This song was written in 1938 for a Broadway musical called Right This Way. A musical, M-U-S-I-C-A-L, is a performance similar to a play, except the actors, in addition to talking, also sing and dance during the performance. This particular musical told the story of a man and a woman who meet in Paris and fall in love. How romantic. But then the man from the United States has to go home. This causes him to leave the woman with whom he has fallen in love behind in Paris. After he leaves, the woman, played in the original musical by the actress Tamara Drassin, sits at a cafe and she sings about her love. She sings, "I'll be seeing you in all the familiar places." A place that is familiar, F-A-M-I-L-I-A-R, M-I-L-I-A-R, is a place you know. She's saying then that she will see her love in all of the places that the two of them know. We think, of course, that she means that as she goes to the places that the two of them know, she will be reminded of her love, even though he isn't there. I'll be seeing you in all the familiar places that this heart of mine embraces all day through. The places are places that her heart embraces, E-M-B-R-A-C-E-S. To embrace means to hold something. You embrace the one you love. You may embrace your husband or wife or child. The heart embraces the places that are familiar to the woman singing the song. These are places that are close to her heart, are close to her. The parks, the trees, the time of day even will remind her of the person she loves. I'll be seeing you in all the familiar places that this heart of mine embraces all day through. She misses her love, of course. While the song was first performed in 1938, the musical for which it was written was not very popular and did not become a success. However, a few years later, in 1943, one of the most popular singers in the United States at that time, Mr. Bing Crosby, decided to record the song himself. Remember, in 1943, the United States was involved in World War II, and millions of men were fighting in other countries away from the women they loved. This song then was popular not only with the soldiers and sailors, but also with the girlfriends and wives who were back here in the United States. In fact, in 1944, it was the most popular song in the United States. Interestingly, another famous popular singer in the U.S., Frank Sinatra, had recorded I'll Be Seeing You a few years later, in 1940, with one of the most popular bands of that time, the Tommy Dorsey Band. Even though they recorded the song had never been released. It had never been made available for people to buy and listen to. Sinatra decided to release the song in 1944. It was already a popular song. And this became, for him, one of his signature songs. A signature song is a song that a singer, an artist, is famous for singing. It's one of the most popular songs of that particular singer. Sinatra, even though it had already been made famous by Crosby, made the song his own in a way by releasing his own version. But it wasn't just Crosby and Sinatra who decided this was a good song to record and sell. A third popular singer, Billie Holiday, a famous female jazz singer, recorded yet another version of the song, and this one became popular as well. So you had three famous singers recording the same song and releasing that song within the period of 2 years. But because everyone loved the song so much, all three of the versions were popular. The Billie Holiday version became popular again more recently, back in 2004, when it was used for a movie called The Notebook, a love story based on the novel by Nicholas Sparks. Over the years, still other singers have recorded this song, including Dean Martin, The Carpenters, Willie Nelson, and the Scottish singer Rod Stewart. The song has become a classic, you could say, about lost love or about people who are separated from their lovers. The two people who wrote the song really believed in the song. They knew that someday it would become popular. Sadly, one of those writers died in 1942 before the song had become well known, but he believed that someday people would sing the song about the painful experience of being separated from the one you love, and he was right. Now let's answer some of the questions you have sent to us. Our first question comes from Ivan, I-V-A-N, in Russia. Ivan wants to know about the meaning of three terms or words that he heard in a recent popular movie called The Martian with Matt Damon. One of the words that he heard was dispense, D-I-S-P-E-N-S-E. To dispense means to supply others with something or to provide something from someone. We often use this verb to dispense when we are talking about a pharmacist or a druggist who is giving medicine to a person who needs it. We talk about the pharmacist dispensing medication or dispensing drugs to a person. Another word Ivan had a question about was wedgie, W-E-D-G-I-E. Well, the term wedgie is something that you will hear children use, perhaps. A wedgie is produced by pulling someone's underwear up from the top of the underwear towards the top of the person's body so that the underwear becomes, well, let's just say, fixed very firmly in your behind, in your butt, or in between the two parts of your butt. That is called a wedgie. The verb would be to give someone a wedgie. It's a thing that I suppose teenagers do to be funny with each other. A third term Ivan didn't understand was on principle, P-R-I-N-C-I-P-L-E. To do something on principle is to do something because you believe it's true or because you believe in a certain idea. The sentence that Ivan heard in the movie is, "And if I ever met a botanist like me, he'd dispense a wedgie on principle." A botanist is a scientist who studies plants. I have no idea what that sentence means, Ivan. I can only guess, but my guess would probably be wrong. To dispense a wedgie is somewhat of an unusual way of saying to give someone a wedgie. The word dispense makes it seem as though it were a prescription, something the doctor would order you to receive. I don't understand the rest of the sentence, to be quite honest with you. I'm sure if I watched the movie, The Martian, it would make more sense to me, but sadly, I haven't seen it yet. Our next question comes from Victor, V-I-C-T-O-R, in Ukraine. Victor wants to know the meaning of three phrases: to get on with something, to get along with someone, and in a nutshell. To get on with something means to make progress in doing something, to continue to do something after stopping for a short time. If, for example, you are working on a report at your office and someone interrupts you, someone stops you from working to talk to you for 5 minutes or 10 minutes, you might say to that person, "Well, I have to get on with my report," meaning I have to go back and continue working on it so I can make progress on it. To get along with someone means to have a friendly relationship with a person, to not have any problems with a person. You could say, "I get along with everyone at work." That means I'm friendly with everyone and everyone is friendly with me. We don't have any serious personal problems. We can talk and communicate with each other and be very friendly about it. Now, interestingly enough, you can also use the phrasal verb to get on with a person as well. You can say, "How do you get on with Mary?" You could say, "Oh, I get on with her very well." That means that you get along with her very well. Finally, the expression "in a nutshell," N-U-T-S-H-E-L-L, means very briefly or in summary. A nut is, of course, very small, so the shell of a nut is very small. If you put something in a nutshell, you would be putting something in a very small place. So the expression "in a nutshell" is used to mean very briefly or in summary. For example, someone may be asking you for a favor, and this person may be talking for several minutes. You may interrupt the person and say, "So in a nutshell, what you want is to use my office today." You're giving a summary. You're giving a very brief statement of a longer problem or a longer question. If someone asks you a question, "What happened at the party last night?" You could say, "Well, I could tell you a long story, but in a nutshell, everyone had a good time. That's what happened." You're giving a brief summary of the events. Our final question comes from Johnny, J-O-N-N-I-E, from the planet of Neptune. Johnny wants to know the meaning of a prefix in English. He wants to know the meaning as well as how we pronounce it in American English. The prefix is S-E-M-I. It can be pronounced either semi or semi. The last vowel there can be pronounced either as an I or an E. There's no difference in meaning in how the prefix is pronounced. Let's define it and then talk a little bit more about its uses. One of the definitions of the prefix semi is partially or not completely. It could also be used to mean almost. You could say, "I'm semi-awake." That means I'm not completely awake. I'm still partly sleeping. Or you could say, "My homework is semi-finished." It's not completely finished. It's partially completed. It's partially finished. It's almost finished. The prefix is used before a couple of words to have a slightly different meaning or a special meaning. One of those words is circle. A semicircle is not just part of a circle, it's exactly one half of a circle, 50%, if you will, of a circle. If the teacher tells her students to stand in a semicircle, she means that they should form a half circle. Another word we use this prefix in front of in a special way is trailer. A semi-trailer is actually a truck that pulls a long trailer, a long vehicle behind it. These are also referred to as 18-wheelers because typically there are 18 wheels on the vehicle and the trailer. A semi-trailer is also called sometimes simply a semi. In that case, semi is a shortened form of the word, and for whatever reason is always pronounced with a long I sound instead of a long E sound. So when we're referring to a semi-trailer, we always say semi, not semi. But if semi or semi is a prefix, then it could be pronounced either as an I or an E. So I hope that's not too confusing for you, Johnny. But up on Neptune, they probably don't have any semis, so you don't really have to worry about it, do you? If you have a question that you're worried about, email us. Our email address is esLPOD@esLPOD.com. From Los Angeles, California, I'm Jeff McQuillan. Thank you for listening. Come back and listen to us again right here on The English Cafe. ESL Podcast English Cafe was written and produced by Dr. Jeff McQuillan and Dr. Lucy Say. This podcast is copyright 2016 by the Center for Educational Development.